Hello, everybody, and welcome to another beautiful Thursday morning. You're listening to Bhavani on IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network. And I'm thrilled to be with all of you again today. It is beautiful outside, and everything is blooming, and life is just feeling really good right now. And I'm so excited about my guest today. My guest, Stephen Ritz, has been on before, but I invited him on again to talk about his new book, The Power of a Plant. Stephen Ritz is a award-winning teacher from the South Bronx who has transformed his classrooms and schools into a green classroom, and he's just doing amazing work, and I'm really thrilled that he's going to be on with us in just a little bit. But before he comes on, I want to talk to you about some things going on in and around the news and share with you some things going on that I've been doing and things coming up. So I first want to just talk about a film I saw Tuesday evening. I joined Food and Water Watch for a documentary screening of the film The Hudson, A River at Risk. And it was a great film. A lot of the information in there I already knew about the pipelines and the moving of fossil fuels of crude gas, oil, from Albany down to the city and back up again, and they're moving it on trains and on barges, and they're also bringing fracked oil from Pennsylvania into New York. And it's just really scary. I mean, if you look at the history of pipelines and freight accidents, derailments, you know, the explosion, the derailment that happened up in Canada that, you know, wiped out a whole city. I mean, they are just really scary, and those were in remote areas. Here we have, within New York City and Albany, huge cities that have millions of people at risk, and the result of what a derailment and explosion could do here is just amazing. And the Exxon oil spill that happened up in Alaska, you know, if that happened here in the Hudson River, cleaning up this crude oil would be horrible, much harder than the oil that was in that barge. So we're looking at really scary situations that we all need to become active and not take this just lying down. And so they handed out flyers with phone numbers. You can call your senators and congressmen and let them know that you want to support the bills that are being proposed right now, and that you want to support these bills and want your representatives to vote positively to make these happen. And it's really essential that we all become involved activists, because if we don't, we are not going to have the results that we want. So the bills in the Senate, it's S-5197, and in the Assembly, it's A-6825. And the number to call is 866-846-4075. And you'll be connected first to Food and Water Watch, and then you can go on to speak to your congressmen and senators. And it's really scary. So we need to become active and do what we can. And what we can is make our voices heard. And that's the silver lining from this new administration. There's just one travesty after the other in the news. And the only thing we can do and hope for that from this administration, we all get a little kick in the butt to become active and to call our congressmen and representatives and let them know how we feel. We also need to call Governor Cuomo. You know, he made fracking illegal in New York State. However, he's allowing the fracked oil from Pennsylvania to be transported through New York. And that is just not okay, because, again, if we have a spill, we have that fracked oil everywhere. And the the release of radon in that gas is really prevalent and is, you know, it has no smell and you can't detect it, and then they're piping that gas into apartments in New York City. So it's just terrible. So please show your activism and call your senators, congressmen, and governor and let them know how you feel. Lots of great things are going on in our area. Tonight there's a membership drive for Slow Food South Shore. Slow Food, for those of you that don't know, is something that's very close to my heart. Slow Food is about good, clean, and fair food, and there's over 200 chapters in the U.S., and we're very fortunate to have Slow Food North Shore and Slow Food South Shore on Long Island, as well as Slow Food East End, and then, of course, there's Slow Food New York City. And all of them have great events that go on a regular basis, and you can check out their websites. My chapter is having a tour tomorrow of the Brooklyn Grange Rooftop Farm and Rooftop Reds, which is a vineyard on top of a building in the Brooklyn Navy Yard. And we will be going from the grain rooftop farm at Brooklyn Grange to Rooftop Reds, and then we'll be also having a pizza party afterwards overlooking Manhattan. So we'd love you to join us. We still have some tickets left, so you can go onto the Slow Food North Shore website, or I even have links from my website at iegreen.com to purchase tickets. We're also having a summer solstice event on Saturday at Restoration Farm, which is an organic farm at Old Bethpage Village in Old Bethpage. And this is going to be a gathering of, it's a potluck. It's very inexpensive, $5 for members, $10 for non-members, live music. And it's just a gathering to bring people together to share in good food, share in the season and the bounty of the farm. So come on down for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. Also on June 21st, there's a Summer Solstice Wild Medicine Herb Walk at Restoration Farm from 6 to 7:30. And that's hosted by Ellen Kamai, who is also a host on PRN. And she's very, very knowledgeable in wild plants and the medicinal value that those wild plants have. So if you have not experienced her wild medicine walks, this is a wonderful opportunity. Also on June 24th, Slow Food East End is having a farm-to-table event at Sylvester Manor. That's out on the East End. And on June 21st, Slow Food New York City is having a farm-to-table dinner in the city. So all these Slow Food events are happening, and you should check out the respective websites of each of the Slow Food chapters and see if you're in that area what events they might be having that you would like to attend. Also coming up July 14th to 16th, Slow Food Nations is happening in Denver, Colorado. That is going to be a huge event. Chapters from around the world. It's an international event. Chapters from countries all over, and lots of our Central America and South American neighbors will be there as well, displaying their local regional foods, and there will be panel discussions and demonstrations. Most of it is free. There are some ticketed events that you need to buy tickets for, but July 14th and 16th, Denver, the whole city is being taken over by Slow Food, and it's just going to be like one big party out on the street. So if you can make it to that, that should be a great, great event. There is a big event that happens every year out in the Hamptons called the Food Truck Derby. It's in Bridgehampton, and that's always a lot of fun. You know, I think something like 100 food trucks show up, and, you know, food trucks that are normally in New York City and Long Island, and they park on the potato fields at the Hayground School, and it's an all-day event. There's lots of beer and non-alcoholic drinks as well. There's music. There's, you know, culinary training and activities for kids. So it is a lot of fun. if you'd like to save the date for August 11th, you should come out to that. And there's lots of other events, but I'm going to not take the time for those. But do check out my website at IE Green for these events. They're all listed there. And, you know, I hope to see you, like I said, at our Slow Food event coming up tomorrow and Saturday. So I do want to share a recipe with you before I invite my guest on. Every year I share this recipe because as the season, as we get into watermelon season, this salad is just delicious. Everybody loves it. And with all the potlucks and picnics going on, it comes together really quick. It's easy and everyone loves it. It is a watermelon, mint, and feta salad. And you're going to start with one medium seedless watermelon cut into 1-inch cubes, 1/3 cup of white balsamic vinegar. It's important to get white balsamic vinegar because the dark vinegar changes the color of the watermelon. It just doesn't look as pretty. Juice of 1/2 lemon, 2 tablespoons of olive oil, salt and pepper, 1 pound of feta cheese cut into small cubes, 1/2 red onion chopped, and 1 medium bunch of mint chopped. And you're going to cut up the watermelon into the 1-inch cubes. Let it drain in a colander for about a half an hour to get a lot of the juice out. But don't throw away that juice because it's really delicious, so just save it and drink it. Meanwhile, you're going to whisk together the white balsamic vinegar, the olive oil, and the lemon juice in a bowl. And then you're just going to pour it over the watermelon and mix in the feta cheese and the onion and the mint and chill it in the refrigerator. And that is it. I like to kind of sprinkle the feta cheese on top right before serving it, because if you just mix it all up, it can look not as nice. So as we all know, presentation is very important. So you want to make it look beautiful. And that's it. It's just a delicious, easy to pull together salad. And if you do make it, please send me feedback. I'd love to hear from all of you. And now it's my pleasure to introduce my guest, Stephen Ritz. He is a South Bronx educator, administrator, who believes that students shouldn't have to leave their community to live, learn, and earn a better one. And he's been affecting his students for years now. He is just an amazing, amazing person. And he was one of the top 10 finalists for the Global Teacher Prize. He has also done TEDx. He is a Health Champion Award winner, 2016 Dr. Oz Award winner. It just goes on and on. Elementary Educator of the Year Award, 2014 Greenness Award. He's just amazing. And his new book called The Power of a Plant, I went to the launch of it a couple of months ago. It's just an amazing book. And so I'm inviting him on right now to tell us more about it. Stephen, you with me?
Good morning, Bhavani. I am here and I am excited.
Great. Well, I'm really excited to have you on because you're just an inspiration to so many people. And your new book is just a great, easy read. And it's just so exciting to, you know, to really read about how you got started. And, you know, for instance, I did not know you were a special ed teacher to start. And you know, but one of the things in your book that really interested me was how daffodils actually broke up a fight, like how you first got started and realized the power that a plant could have. So I thought maybe you could share that story with us and then tell, you know, just go on to share with people a little bit of your background, how you first got inspired to start teaching through plants.
Sure. So good morning again, and good morning, everyone. And the premise of the book is simple, that each and every person can make epic happen, that deep within all of us there is something, a seed that is waiting to be planted, nourished, and brought to fruition that could yield a crop of epic proportions. And while nobody can do everything, everyone can do something. And that's what this book is about, doing something. So it's a perfect summer read. I'm so excited to be here. And my odyssey, as documented in the book, is rather a remarkable one because, to your point, I am not a farmer. I've become a people farmer. and by accident and out of a tragedy where literally my wife and I lost some children and I had to recently bury some of my students due to illness and disease and death. It was horrible. I took a job at the turn of the millennium, just closest to my physical home, determined to circle the wagons around my family, which is what everybody needs to do. And now more than ever in this age and this time, you know, just really love is the solution. So I took a job within walking distance of my home, unbeknownst to me, at the most dysfunctional high school in all of New York City, one that was slated to be closed, one that was routinely accepting students from Rikers Island, and had a 17% graduation rate. So imagine, that was what I walked into kind of blindly, and inherited a class of students that literally came to me from Rikers Island and a bunch of other places with a lot of baggage and a lot of needs, and I was expected to pull a miracle out of the hat. Remarkably, someone sent me this box, and I get the call to the principal's office. Mr. Ritz, come to the principal's office. And I'm so excited because, first I'm thinking, how could I be in trouble? It's only a few weeks into the job. What did I do wrong? I walk in, and the principal's secretary greets me with this wonderful greeting, saying, Mr. Ritz, you've got this big gift. Look at this box. Someone sent you something. And instantly I get so excited. I'm thinking, yes, this is going to be my ticket out, a box of microscopes, equipment, something great, something grand, something that's going to impact children's lives. And like the oldest sixth grader in the building, which I remain to this day, I couldn't even wait to get the class open. I ran out into the hall, opened up this box, and looked inside, and holy crap, I was just devastated. It was a box of what I thought were onions, and I was like, this sucks. This is just awful. I don't know what this is, but the one thing I did know is that they looked like projectiles, and these things were getting nowhere near my students and nowhere near me, and just went and took the box, walked with my head between my legs back to the classroom, threw it behind this big hissing radiator behind a window in the sunlight, and forgot about it. and then went on with my life. So much for the gift. At least I wasn't in trouble, I thought. Went back to doing my work, which was teaching, and about 6 weeks later, there was a fight in class. I had some really tough kids, and we had a protocol for that. It was called Duck, and hope the cell phone in the building worked. And literally, this girl goes running up to go and beat the hell out of this kid who just was not stopping teasing her. And literally, I see this girl running across the hallway, and in my mind, I see my career ending. And this boy goes running to the radiator, and I'm thinking, OMG, he's going under the radiator. Something is going to come out, and this is going to be the end of my career. And out he pulls flowers, and he starts waving these flowers in front of this girl's face. No one in the class knew where the flowers came from. The whole class is laughing. This skinny little boy is waving flowers in defense at this large, charging, tattooed girl who's ready to pounce on him. And right then and there, that's what I call a teachable moment. And it turns out that those onions were actually bulbs, daffodil bulbs, and they had all bloomed between the heat and the steam and the moisture behind the radiator. And this little boy, Gonzalo, reached under to grab something to get at this girl, wound up grabbing hundreds of flowers. And the boys wanted to give them to girls, and the girls wanted to give them to their parents and sell them. And that was the birth of a whole new movement as far as I was concerned. And we looked inside the box and read their directions and found out that they were bulbs. And that year, my students and I went on to plant, I think, 15 or 20,000 bulbs across New York City to commemorate 9/11. And a movement was born.
Great story. Great story. So
yeah,
then how did you go from flowers to vegetables?
Pardon me?
I said, so how did you go from flowers to vegetables?
Great question. We always knew what plants were, but so many of my students, and as I was, were absolutely disconnected from where food comes from and what it truly is. So we knew about plants, and we started this work with ornamental plants, landscape, tree pruning, green roofs, that kind of work, parks maintenance. And then we learned that you could grow food. And given that so many of my students come from food insecure backgrounds, are food challenged, and on the flip side, we had so many immigrant students, kids who came to this country by a parents who understand what food is and just had the desire to grow it or have access to it, we learned about food. And of course, that was only magnified by a visit to Whole Foods, where we actually saw this gorgeous cornucopia of food from all around the world and realized, wow, we could grow this. And that was absolutely amazing. We started putting in farms across the Bronx, taking over abandoned lots, and really turning unproductive places into highly productive, aspirational spaces that generated food, community, opportunity, and resilience. So I then moved on to mastering indoor technology, wanting to take that experience and that joy that was limited to seasonality and out of school and bring it into school. And I gave birth to the first edible classroom in the country. I've taken that model and tweaked it into using tower gardens. And I like to say that now we have 5,000 classrooms across the United States and God knows how many thousands more around the world growing something greater, using 90% less water and 90% less space, growing food 365 days a year, all year long, impacting personal performance and most important, and equally as important, school performance. Because I believe the art and science of growing vegetables align the content, core, and subject area instruction can transform schools and personal outcomes in ways that benefit the entire world. And most importantly, communities where I work, one student at a time, one classroom at a time, one school at a time. It is indeed the power of a plant. And everyone can make epic happen. That's what this is about.
Wow. And the towers that you developed the towers, or did you found them out there, and how did you transform them to work within the classroom? Do you have to get grow lights? What did you have to do to make that work?
Right. So you've known me for so many years, and I've kind of gone from being this MacGyver, if you will, of indoor gardening, you know, the kind of maker and tinkerer of this space, to really thinking, how do I take this love that I have for students, health, wellness, and quality education and make it scalable and replicable? So in 2013, when my students and I won the National Indoor Gardening Championship, largely because we created a system that was very effective and won acclaim, we got invited to a convention, literally the National Indoor Gardening Championship, and we were flown out to San Francisco, the principal and I, only to find out it was largely funded by the Indoor Marijuana Growing Association, which the kids thought I was just the coolest teacher in the world. You know, to show up in a place where everyone was legally growing weed was amazing, and I was just so glad the principal was there. So that if I was going down, he was going down with me. But what it speaks to, quite frankly, is the resilience and the untapped potential of my students and marginalized communities, not only in New York City, but in Long Island and all across the country, because my students responded in a Herculean way. You know, we sat around, we said, boys and girls, there will be no sampling. Let's make sure we all get home and learn something from this. And there, across the convention floor, in the midst of incredible growing facilities and closet tents and hydroponic facilities and Dutch buckets, I saw this humble little thing called a tower garden. And instantly it spoke to me, not only as an effective tool for growing in a classroom, but an effective tool for teaching, you know, for using the art and science of growing vegetables, aligning it to Common Core. It was manageable. It was lightweight. It was portable. It was affordable. And it took the notion of me being a MacGyver and telling people to do this, try that, and really constantly iterating to something that you could buy off the shelf. And as I like to say, go from a box to a garden in 45 minutes if you're a man, or 15 minutes if you're a woman, because you'll read the directions and watch the video like you should. But nonetheless, even 45 minutes, so it was one classroom period. So it was perfect. It's bell to bell. It's indoors. And I was the first to bring tower gardens into a classroom. And again, in 2014, there were none. Today, there are over 5,000 in America, and we're just getting started. We're spreading across Canada, United Arab Emirates, you know, the Middle East. I'm in Mexico. Later this month, I'll be traveling to Germany and Europe to spread this notion that, you know, we can grow good health and good academic performance simultaneously with scalable, low-cost technology. And that's what it's about.
Growing something great. For the tower gardens, can you still use organic seeds and good quality seeds?
Absolutely. I'm using non-GMO seeds. You know, I like to say my organically grown students are growing organically grown results locally, and that to me is what it's all about. as I like to say, as you well know, 50,000 pounds of vegetables later, my favorite crop is organically grown citizens, graduates, members of the middle class, kids who are going to college, kids who showed up at the book launch event and shook your hand. And I have so many young children who are now inspired to learn how to cook, learn how to eat their vegetables. You know, I'm so excited about having you come and cook with us on our Green Bronx Machine mobile classroom kitchen, four stories up in a 100-year-old school building in the middle of the South Bronx. I know the kids are going to eat you and your recipe up alive, and we can't wait to have you. And that's what's exciting,
yeah, we're
going to
have to talk
children
about
who are excited about healthy food. I don't know what we're going to make. We'll talk about that offline. I got a lot of eggplant coming. I will tell you that CS, which stands for Community School 55, right here in the South Bronx, is internationally acclaimed as the home of the perfect pickle. So we've got children who love to grow cucumbers, turn them into pickles, and grow the aromatics that flavor them in a variety of ways. And I'm just excited for them to meet you. And that's what this movement is all about, meeting people, connecting people. And for children and communities who have not had a seat at the table here in the South Bronx, we're building our own table. And most importantly, putting the culture back in agriculture, respecting people, respecting community, respecting ethnicities. And learning about, you know, that we don't need to eat McDonald's all day long and a big steak to be happy.
Yeah, changing the eating pattern of kids and what they choose is huge, especially when you're coming from communities where what they see and what is available to them is fast food, crap food everywhere.
It is what I call a mess. Manufactured edible synthetic substances, and it is just toxic. It's toxic for the students. It's toxic for the community. It's toxic for the environment. It is what I call an absolute extraction economy, taking the health and wealth and opportunity from this community and transporting it far, far away and leaving in its wake death, disease, and dis-ease.
In your work in the South Bronx, are you still working with one classroom at a time, or are you now more working on an administrative level, getting these grow gardens, tower gardens into many different classrooms? How are you working, and how has your job changed as a teacher now that you're doing this?
So those are great questions, and the answer to all of them is yes to all of the above. I'm still teaching on a daily basis, but I'm supporting administrators, I'm supporting teachers. I've worked on a brand new curriculum, which is available. It's Common Core, Next Generation Science Standards Aligned. I'm working with corporations to bring large grants so that people can replicate the work that I'm doing all around the world. But you know me, Bhavani, nothing makes me happier than getting down in class and being the oldest sixth grader in the building. And at a school right now that goes pre-K to 5, that makes me king of the hill. I have a master key
and
a driver's license.
You're in school pre-K to 5 now.
So I'm pre-K to 5, but I touch schools from kindergarten all the way to high school around the country. I do a lot of professional development, online professional development. You can access me online. You can access me via Skype and FaceTime. So we are really kind of expanding the work that we do because, you know, and I set out to start this many years ago. I always said I wanted my reach to forever exceed my grasp, and that's what this is all about, making sure my reach forever exceeds my grasp. Connecting people all around the world to grow something greater. But my biggest joy, of course, is to sit here and get down and be right in the middle of it with children and teachers.
And can you speak briefly about the Green Bronx Machine? What exactly is that?
So the Green Bronx Machine is an impact-driven, for-purpose organization that has charitable status. So if you're listening and would love to make a donation, we'd love to honor that. You can check us out at greenbronxmachine.org. or on our Facebook page. But Green Bronx Machine is rooted in the belief that we are Americans, Dominicans, Puerto Ricans, African Americans. We can and will grow ourselves into new paradigms of success, and that locally grown movements that take those who are apart from society and make them a part of it, rooted in health and wellness, have a triple bottom line for all of us, leaving the world a little better, a little brighter, a little healthier, with a whole lot of fruit and vegetables and smiling, happy, high-performing children in the wake.
Cool.
So we grow, I like to say, Green Bronx Machine grows vegetables, but our vegetables grow students, schools, communities, resilience, and opportunities. And again, 50,000 pounds of vegetables later, 2,200 local jobs later, moving attendance from 40% to 93%. We leave a lot of happy, healthy children and smiles in the wake. And that's what this work is all about, growing something greater. And the theme of the book, which is to make epic happen. And everybody deep within them has the ability and the desire to make epic happen. So I hope when you read the book, you get out there and you get inspired to do something. And know that in the process, all the proceeds are supporting public schools and public education. So how cool is that? You know, even by the act of buying the book and making yourself happy, you are paying it forward and growing something greater. So please get out there and buy the book, The Power of a Plant. Read about it, share about it, talk about it. It's gotten rave reviews from everybody. I love the book, and not because I wrote the book, but because I read the book. And I really wanted something that was fun, exciting. You will laugh, you will cry, you will jump for joy, but you'll also have actionable nuggets of things that you can do, from gardening tips to school administrator tips, and learn about my odyssey from 300 pounds to 185 pounds, bringing sexy back, you know, from hope to the Pope, from our greenhouse in the South Bronx to the White House and the South Lawn. That's our story, and if I can do it, you can do it. And that's what I want people to know. Keep falling up the ladder of success. Don't be afraid to fail, but always embrace success and celebrate along the way. Si se puede.
It's great. So can you share with us how the work that you're doing in the classroom has impacted the families? Like when these kids go home to their families, how does what they're learning in school transfer into the home environment?
Great question. Well, McDonald's and the evil empires of the world have long figured out long ago the mommy, mommy, mommy factor. So it's not only about sending food home. It's about equipping families and students to know what to do with that food, how to cook it, how to prepare it, what you can do with it and why you should be eating it. And, of course, it's much easier when little Johnny, the pre-K kid or the kindergartner, first or second grader, brings home a big bag of greens to mom. Just, mommy, I grew this, for mommy to get excited than it is for a high school student to do it or even want to do it. But if you start impacting children at a young age with family activities, that is game changing. I'm so proud to say that here in the Bronx, we have a profitable fresh food box program connecting local students and local economies with local farmers. And that's awesome. You know, to be able to bring people together around a commonality, which is non-negotiable, healthy food, is critical, and of course a healthy economy. So the food that we're getting here is very local as opposed to shipped from all over the world. We're doing it and creating a market. I like to say from a movement to a market. We have after-school cooking programs where the children are learning how to cook food. This summer you're going to be here cooking with them. They're going to learn about the recipe in advance, grow it, prepare it, bring it home to their parents. We're going to bring parents in, and we're going to have a rockin' Bhavani time.
It all sounds so great. I want to talk also about your new project, the National Health, Wellness, and Learning Center. But before we do, let's take a couple-minute break, and when we come back, let's focus on that for a moment. Everyone, don't
you
go anywhere. I'm talking with Stephen Ritz, author of his latest book, The Power of a Plant, and you're listening to Bhavani at IE Green. Be right back.
Capotate, host of The Vinyl Experience, and you're listening to PRN, your source for the best in progressive conversation, news, and entertainment.
Stay tuned for more news you can use on PRN, the Progressive Radio Network.
Welcome back. You're listening to Bhavani at IE Green on the Progressive Radio Network, and I'm here with my guest, Stephen Ritz, talking about his new book, The Power of a Plant, and the Green Bronx Machine. So, Stephen, can you share with us the new project you're working on, the National Health and Wellness Learning Center at CS55?
Sure. The National Health, Wellness, and Learning Center at CS55 is a classroom that's actually a center that, believe it or not, has had visitors in the first 2 years from 60 countries and six continents. So if anybody out there is listening from Antarctica, we want you so we can say all seven continents have visited this classroom. But in a 100-plus-year-old building in the middle of the housing projects in the least likely place and the largest stretch of public housing in the middle of the South Bronx, we have taken an old, underutilized classroom and turned it into a state-of-the-art facility that offers whole school instruction aligned to Common Core and Next Generation Science standards and 25 periods of in-classroom instruction aligned to 25 periods of content area instruction throughout the school. So I'm proud to say that this, and realize this, this building was built over 100 years ago, long before there was public housing, long before there were 45,000 people living within 8 square blocks. This classroom was the place where, the only place in the whole building where you could find books, because over 100 years ago, the only place that there were books and before the internet was the school library. Budget cuts and the transformation, and sometimes tragic consequences of budget cuts and new administration left this room in tremendous disrepair. I inherited a facility in a school where this was being used for storage, outdated equipment that was underutilized, and of course every classroom, thank God, in this school has its own classroom library and the internet. So the need for a traditional old school library made little sense, and certainly we didn't have the budget to afford it. So I took the money that I got from the Global Teacher Prize contest and really set out to design something new. And it is an absolutely green classroom, not only in function, but even in color, with green floors, green walls, and a blue ceiling. In a community that is traditionally far too gray and institutional. It has a indoor garden where we send home 100 bags of groceries a week. We'll be sending home clamshells full of lettuce to our partners, Gotham Greens, today. We have a grove system, which is an interactive aquaculture system with fish and plants communicating via the internet. Every single thing that you see in this classroom is on wheels, down to our Promethean board, down to the desks, down to the bookshelves, down to our tower gardens. And of course, we feature the Green Bronx Machine mobile classroom kitchen. And I heard about the Long Island Food Truck Derby. We've got one going on right here in the South Bronx. That's right, four stories up. We've got a food truck on wheels for a tenth of the cost with no exhaust. It is a full commercial kitchen that is absolutely 100% portable that goes from classroom to classroom on wheels, allowing teachers to teach, students to cook, and everyone to have that experience, you know, and at a low-cost price point. So I like to say we are the home of iteration, ideation, and innovation, and people come from all over the world to see us. It's really a
That's
place
amazing.
Of wonder, inquiry,
so talk
and
a little bit about the aquaculture.
Net on food and energy. Pardon me?
I'm sorry, I was going to say, talk a little bit about the aquaculture. You're growing fish, and the fish feed off of the, or the plants feed off of the fish waste, correct?
That is correct. We have the first grove system in America, Unit 001. In fact, if you go to the Green Bronx Machine website and look at the new video, well, it's not a new video. It's about a year ago. We were here. We were actually blessed by Dr. Betty Rosa, the New York State Regents Chancellor. Bronx Borough President Ruben Diaz was here. We had representatives from across the city and across the state coming down to see what a low-cost, portable, innovative classroom could look like. And the impact here has just been huge. We have bicycle-powered blenders. We have smoothie machines. We have all kinds of student-driven technology plus solar technology. And the children just absolutely love being here. The first year we were here while building the place, the children were so excited and wanted to be so much a part of it that we reduced behavioral incidents and out of class time by 50%, which meant teachers were teachers and students were learning, and we were all engaged and involved towards a paradigm of continued and progressive success. In the second year, we moved 5 of the 10 critical indicators of school performance from developing to proficient. Last year, we saw a 45% increase school-wide on state tests. including special needs and English language learners. So we really move those who are apart from success to part of a whole school success while growing and eating our way into good health. And this year, we actually got the best New York State quality review from the Department of Ed in the history of the school. So it is entirely possible to do something great with a triple bottom line at a low cost with a little bit of innovation, ideation, and a whole lot of epicness.
It's amazing. It's just amazing. I mean, the outcomes is what's so amazing. I mean, you know, doing it and having the kids enjoy it is wonderful, but, you know, when you see the results that you're seeing, you just really realize that what teachers do in the classroom and how they bring the information to the kids so that they are integrating it and not feeling like they're learning, but just having fun and learning in the process.
No child rises to low expectations. And zip code and skin color should not turn out in life. So I am absolutely determined to make sure that children should not have to leave their neighborhood to live, learn, and earn in a better one. And I'm proud to say here in the South Bronx, we are working towards sending the first cohort of children from the South Bronx to the Bronx High School of Science. I've got classrooms full of what I call STEMinists. Little girls that want to grow up to be engineers and doctors and computer geeks. And that's totally cool because that's not the traditional trajectory for children in the South Bronx. And we want to change that rhetoric. And we can do it classroom at a time, opportunity at a time, student at a time. And a lot of it has to do with what they're eating, because most importantly, back when I first met you and I was the dean of students, what was I seeing in the dean's office? Who wound up there because they were fighting. And the first question I would say is, what do you have for breakfast? And it would either be nothing, or it would be an energy drink, a bag of cookies, a bag of chips, a soda. So children will never be well-read if they're not well-fed. So in schools where children are getting 2 to 3 meals a day, it is absolutely tantamount that we fuel their little bodies and little brains with the best nutrition possible and equip them to go on to understand that input equals output. So we want them fueling their bodies and minds in great ways. And that's what this is about. And in the process, they're learning the academics that they need to learn, too, because it's fun. Because if children grow it, they eat it. And that's what this movement is about, transforming lives.
And have you been able to transform
the bottom line is we're having a lot of fun, too.
I'm sorry.
Pardon me?
I was asking, have you been able to impact the school cafeteria at all with the food you're growing?
Oh, yes. We are a preeminent school garden to school cafe site because we grow food all year long. That food goes right into the school cafeteria or right home with the students because it's indoors and GAP certified, which means good agriculture practices. You know, we don't have issues. And we are learning to take that food from upstairs to downstairs. Vegetable consumption is up in the school. The children have banded together and convinced the principal to ban chocolate milk from the school. How cool is that? And the parents fought the children. They said, oh, they won't drink milk if it doesn't have chocolate in it. But the children were able to prove them wrong. And we always know that children are the big agents for change. If you start them at good habits, it's just easier to keep building on them, mindful that it is easier to raise healthy children and fix broken men. And that's what this work is about, starting at the youngest age possible to give these children the greatest and most multiplicative opportunities to succeed in the world. And what do we know? The children who are obese, 99% of the people who are obese as adults were obese as children. And I'm in a community that has some of the highest rates of childhood diabetes, childhood obesity, all kinds of chronic disease and disease. So if we can affect change by what we're eating and keep these children going from healthcare to a more important manner of self-care, that's win-win-win for everybody.
Absolutely, absolutely. I know I've been hearing some of the latest statistics of, 10-year-old, the majority, I think like 100% of 10-year-old kids or 90-something percent of 10-year-old kids already have fatty streaks in their arteries at 10 years old, and you used to not see that until adulthood. It's just horrible, the food that most kids are eating. So any impact you can have, and as we know also, the lower income populations have the highest rate of diabetes and obesity and disease. So the change that you're doing is just so remarkable. Now, you said that the programs that you're doing are replicable, that other schools can take them into their schools. Do you have specific advice for other educators who wish to improve their students' health at their schools and how they can bring your program to their schools?
Sure. So in the book, The Power of a Plan, I highlight, you know, some easy action steps, what I call low-hanging fruit, to how teachers can approach administrators, but also how administrators can approach teachers to kind of affect this change. I give some very specific examples. On the Green Bronze Machine website, we're proud to be offering the new Green Bronze Machine curriculum, which is a Common Core Next Generation Science Standards P21 an international baccalaureate-aligned curriculum across all content areas that puts the art and science of growing food to academic outcomes. So it's a lot of fun. We focus on using low-cost technology like a single tower garden in a class, along with academic outcomes, so that teachers have a scope and sequence developmental curriculum that they could do day-to-day across content areas. They could go once a week, twice a week, three times a week, four times a week, five times a week. It even mimics the, and actually matches the rate of growth of the plants. So it's scaled. It's very research-based. You can get a site license. There are all kinds of things that we're doing. But, you know, my idea is just to simply plant a seed. And listen, Bhavani, you've known me a long time. Back when I was 300 pounds on my first TED Talk talking about, oh, we're going to change the world. You know, simple actions add up. And the goal of this book is to inspire people to make epic happen, to make one simple change that will transform their lives and catapult them on a trajectory of success they never imagined. And that's been the miracle of my life, you know, from the South Bronx, you know, to the South, to Southampton, from hope to the Pope. Here I am. And in many ways, I feel like I'm just getting started. I keep falling up the ladder of success, but each and every day I'm excited and inspired by the young people I meet. And while I've garnered a few accolades across the way, the most important thing is seeing communities that are coming, you know, coming to life, children who are succeeding and doing things that they never imagined. Families that, in a community that didn't have access to food, now come to school daily for education and food. That's the kind of nutrition we can all be proud of.
Absolutely. And so the work that you're doing, have you, I know you've really also gotten very involved in food policy and becoming a food advocate. Can you share with us some of the greatest food policy challenges you see in New York and what recommendations you have to address them?
Well, for me, I'm more of an action guy than a policy guy. So I always tell people to vote with their fork. You are what you eat. And, you know, your voice is your greatest contribution. So number one, I want people to become engaged citizens. I want them to vote. I want them to respond. Sadly, our country, as you documented just moments before I took on the radio, we're in a tough time right now. But, you know, democracy got us in, and democracy will get us out as long as we continue to engage those who need to be engaged the most. So that's part of my mantra. You know, also vote with your pocketbook. How you spend your money is critical. So I urge children every day to think about where their little dollars are going and how those dollars add up. And that to me is the most important thing, is really for me access to information, access to food, access to opportunity, and understanding that, you know, input equals output.
Yeah, I'm just looking at you know, like the administration that we do have right now, we are dealing with a challenging situation, to say the least. And they're trying to, you know, go backwards on the food policy changes that Michelle Obama had put into place. How are you seeing that impact your school cafeteria, or are you able to override it because you have so much enthusiasm behind what you're doing?
So I'm able to override that because of my enthusiasm. My children, because they're advocating, are overcoming that because of the enthusiasm. But most importantly, you know, we're growing food. We're growing food in school 365 days a year. Children are making better choices. We are bringing in programs that work for us, that feed our community. And, you know, we can't wait for a seat at the table. So I like to say we're building our own and feeding ourselves, and that's what this is all about, a sense of resilience and opportunity. But we're also making demands that we never made before because we understand that business as usual is no longer an option. You know, we can't, and on a systemic level, you know, we can't fix bullet holes with Band-Aids. And what I mean by that is, you know, the notion of soup kitchens feeding communities like ours, that makes no sense. People, there are some real open wounds here in this community. And, you know, while people want to see a nice clean Band-Aid and a nice clean bandage, what we really need to do is let those scabs harden if we're ever going to heal. And sometimes that takes a little hard work and a whole lot of advocacy. But children who are able to do it and willing to do it are going to picket those scabs and help those scabs create a, you know, a healing process that ultimately will not be temporary, but will be permanent and intergenerational, because that's what this work is about, ending intergenerational poverty and ending intergenerational hunger.
Yeah, I think, you know, something you're talking about is really key, because I know lots of communities who are not happy about the school cafeteria. I mean, I was on the cafeteria committee at my kid's school for years, and you get nowhere, you know, one step forward, two step back, and you don't get anywhere. And I think just getting to growing the food and making the change yourself and bringing those vegetables into the cafeteria yourself is really the answer. Because
and also
trying to
educating children, it's also not only what you're bringing in, but it's what you're keeping out. So sometimes you think, oh, if you give them this, they're going to be happy. And for me, it's not about being happy. It's about being healthy and then being happy. So what we are having are a bunch of food ambassadors. And understand something. I'm pro-health, but I'm not anti-pizza and anti-hot dogs. I want children to enjoy all things, but I want them to enjoy the right thing, all things in moderation, and all things with a better focus. So when we have children who are handing children, you know, the first healthy option and saying, hey, have the protein, eat the veg before you have your milk and starch, that's a good thing. And when children impact children, it takes the adults. You don't hear me screaming all day, eat your vegetables. I want to expose them to options. That's what it's about. It's not about do this. It's about try this. It's about not yucking somebody's yum. It's about not saying, I don't like it until I try it. And those are some of the larger lessons in life that really impact children on many a level.
Right. And also we have to realize that we can't be telling them what they have to do. They have to, like you're saying, learn it themselves and want it themselves, because we've all learned that doesn't work if we try to impart our beliefs on people without them believing it themselves. It doesn't work.
Right. We like children. I like to say this is a program of attraction rather than pushing it down people's throats. And sadly, what people put down their throat is very appalling. So when you can attract them by what you're doing and the results you're getting, it becomes an attraction. And that's the most important thing. It becomes, you know, like I like to say, we are the Louis Vuitton Moet Hennessy of programs. You know, we don't aggressively go after tons of people. Exclusivity breeds market share. And that's what we're about. Really creating an exclusive level of success that children and communities want to aspire to, and that they get excited about, not a default.
Right. So we're almost out of time. Can you share with everybody again where they can find out about the Green Bronx Machine, about your book, and how they can get involved?
Sure. So nothing would thrill me more than for you to hang up your radio or turn off your phone and go straight to the Green Bronx Machine website, check out our programs. You can order my book at the Stephen Ritz, that's STEPHENRITZ website. 100% of the proceeds are going to support the program. The book is called The Power of a Plant. You can get it on Amazon. I think it's on sale this week on Amazon. Get on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Books A Million, Kindle. They're doing a voice version of it. And support the work that we're doing. The children have an amazing Facebook page, the Green Bronx Machine Facebook page. Stephen Ritz has a Facebook page. We're on Twitter. We're on Instagram. But most importantly, go out there and make epic happen in your lives. If I inspire you to do one great thing, thank a teacher, thank a parent, hug an auntie or an uncle, acknowledge someone who's made a difference in your life and tell them thank you, and pay it forward. But please go out there and buy the book. Check it out. I give you a double your money back guarantee. That's right. This is Steve Ritz saying, if you don't like the book, I'll buy it back from you at double what you paid. So it's The Power of a Plant. It's available online in bookstores. And realize, you know, we want to create a movement here. So get out there and be a part of it. There are some great recipes for personal and professional success in there. Along the way, you'll laugh, you'll cry, you'll jump for joy, and you'll experience what my odyssey has been and hopefully make part of my life your life. And get out there and make epic happen. And as we say in the South Bronx, si se puede, grow something great.
Well, you are definitely making epic happen. You're an inspiration for so many people. Do you have any events coming up, by the way? Any events that you want to share with people?
We have a massive event coming up on August 3rd here at the school. We'll be posting more about it on the Green Bronx Machine website and Green Bronx Machine Facebook pages. But, you know, I'm thrilled to say that we have culinary and career camps starting here on July 5th. On July 27th, we're going to do Facebook Live with We Are Teachers to over 1 million teachers across America. How cool is that? I didn't even know there were that many teachers. But they're all signed up and ready to go. So that's on June 27th. All kinds of things are happening. And again, to stay on top of all our events and activities, check out the Green Bronx Machine Facebook page or the website or the Stephen Ritz site and grow something great. Get involved. Plant something in
your backyard.
Thank you, Stephen.
Thank you so much. And I will be speaking to you about coming up to the South Bronx myself and participating. And I look forward to it.
We can't wait to meet you. All right. See you soon. Thanks, Connie,
okay.
And have a great day.
Okay. You too. And thank you, everybody who's been joining us. Thank you for listening. You've been listening to Bhavani at I Eat Green on the Progressive Radio Network. See you all again next week. Bye for now.